This is a story of the two dumbest pirates in the entire history of the universe. My name's Finn John, and I do the Offbeat Oregon History newspaper column. And what you've queued up here is the audio version of the Offbeat Oregon Du Jour RSS service. This brings you a new story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History newspaper column every day in your choice of text and images for your newsreader or audio-only format for your podcatcher. And of course, right now you are listening to the audio version. Offbeat Oregon History is a newspaper column that brings true stories from Oregon history, stories of heroes and rascals, of shipwrecks and lost gold, of Shanghaied sailors and Skid Row bordellos and pirates and robbers and buried treasure and unsolved mysteries and just all sorts of great stuff. It's real swashbuckling action. The stories are all true and real, and citations to sources are included with a text version. If you want to get these things delivered regularly, just direct your podcatcher to ofor.us/p as in podcast, which will redirect you to the correct location you can subscribe. If you'd rather read them and see the pictures that go with them while you're waiting in line at Starbucks, your address is ofor.us/t as in text. Send your newsreader that way and you'll be all set. A couple of other things I want to let you know. First of all, if the movie ratings people were going to rate any of the Offbeat Oregon stuff, I'm pretty sure they give it a PG. All the Offbeat Oregon stuff is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Sharealike 3.0 license. You can Google that. It'll give you all the information. It's really easy to find. But basically what it means is you can use this stuff for pretty much anything you want, including commercial stuff, provided proper attribution is given. So let's get to the column. It was first published on April 17th, 2011. And you know what? It's one of my very favorite stories. But then, you know, I'm an old police reporter. I love dumb crook stories. The headline, once again, Amateur Pirates' Bumbling Scheme Didn't Work Out As They Planned. And what it's all about is two liquored-up Navy deserters that had planned to seize control of a passenger liner, drive it onto the beach, and steal away into the night with 3 tons of gold. It's probably safe to say they didn't think their plan through very well. Here's the story. It was probably the last act of piracy ever carried out on a commercial ship within American territorial waters. And it was a pathetic one. In fact, piracy may be the wrong word. It had a lot more in common with a couple clumsy freelancers trying to hijack a 727 than anything Blackbeard would have done. Still, piracy it was, if Webster's New World Dictionary is to be believed, and what its perpetrators lacked in brains, they certainly made up for in ambition. Their plan was for the two of them to take over a 253-foot passenger steamer, run it aground, and slip off into the woods with the $2 million worth of gold that they believed it was carrying. This was a bad plan on so many levels, and for so many reasons, that it's hard to know where to start. Perhaps it's best to simply tell the story. In the summer of 1910, 30-year-old U.S. Navy sailor French West had come up with a plan. All he needed was a real good friend. It seemed he'd found that friend in 26-year-old shipmate George Washington Wise, a sailor from Boston. The idea was the two of them would slip away from their ship, stationed in San Francisco Bay, and travel to Seattle, where they'd take passage on one of the big steamers that hauled the gold out of Alaska and down to San Francisco via Seattle. Off the coast of Oregon, in the middle of the night, they'd storm the wheelhouse and take over. Then, they'd put the helm over, run the thing straight onto the beach, hop overboard, and disappear into the woods with the loot. Even making allowances for the benefit of hindsight, it's really hard to imagine how West and Wise could possibly have thought this would work. The ship they had in mind was a huge ocean-going passenger liner full of people who lived in Seattle. In 1910, Seattle was a frontier city awash with miners back from the gold fields in the Yukon and Alaska, many of whom carried .32 revolvers around in their pockets like we do cell phones today. Those passengers couldn't really be counted on to sit quietly and sweetly by if they were to find out that their ship was being hijacked. So even if West and Wise could avoid waking up the passengers, running a steamer head-on into the side of a randomly selected piece of Oregon coast scenery is like flipping a coin. Heads, you hit a beach and live. Tails, you hit rocks and die. And if they won that coin toss, there they would be, on a strange beach, in the middle of the night, trying to slip away from a couple hundred angry passengers plus whatever locals might be on hand, with $2 million worth of gold. $2 million worth. In 1910, gold was $21 an ounce, so $2 million worth was just a little shy of 6,000 pounds. 3 tons of gold, a ton and a half for each of them. Most likely they thought, as many did at the time, that the Oregon coast was a howling and uninhabited wilderness, a great place for capital criminals to go for quiet time while on the lam. They would no doubt have been astonished at the number of well-armed local residents ready to welcome them, pretty much regardless of where they landed. But even allowing for misconceptions, it's probably safe to suggest that West and Wise didn't think the plan over very carefully. Still, in the wee small hours of the morning of August 21st, 1910, there the two of them were, thoroughly braced with spirits and padding along the deck to the wheelhouse of the 253-foot, 2,000-ton passenger steamer SS Buckman, ready to give it a good go. The ship was about 20 miles off the mouth of the Umpqua River at the time. What happened next exactly is a bit hard to know, because every account of the attack is different. But after reading them all, giving extra credence to eyewitness accounts in contemporary newspapers, I'd say this is probably close to what actually happened. West and Wise first opened the wheelhouse door. Second mate Fred Plath and quartermaster Otto Kohlmeister looked up in alarm, and then the guns came out. A revolver in Wise's fist, a sawed-off double-barrel shotgun in West's hands. Plath was ordered to stretch out on the deck, and Kohlmeister remained, hands on the wheel. According to Stan Allen, he was cursing vigorously the whole time. Already there was a problem. The captain wasn't there. Leaving Wise to cover the two in the wheelhouse, West started aft to the captain's cabin. Now, Captain Edwin B. Wood must have already known something was going on. One source, which I think makes plenty of sense, suggests that he was awakened by a heavy rolling of the ship, which would have told him the vessel had changed direction and was headed towards the shore. Remember, the wind off the Oregon coast comes out of the southwest. So when a ship is sailing up the coast, it rolls in a certain direction, but when it turns 90 degrees and sails toward the coast, it rolls in the other direction and rolls more heavily. And given what usually happens when a liner gets too close to that coast, it makes perfect sense that this would ring alarm bells in the skipper's head, get him out of bed. In any case, when West got there, he actually found Wood, Captain Wood, so we have West, Wise, and Wood. You think that's a little confusing? Okay, so Captain Wood was reaching for a pistol. West let him have it with both barrels. The captain died in his tracks. Up in the wheelhouse, the gunfire startled Wise, and he poked his head out to see what had happened. One of his prisoners, most sources say it was Kohlmeister, took advantage of this opportunity to reach up over the wheel and grab the whistle cord and give it a good yank. The liner's steam-powered whistle screamed a 3-digit decibel alarm, and now suddenly the whole ship was wide awake and wondering what was going on. West, hustling back from the captain's cabin, arrived just in time to start collecting new crew members. Like lobsters entering a trap, they would run to the wheelhouse to see what was going on, see West there with his guns on them, he had a revolver in addition to his shotgun, and then West would order each newcomer to join the growing line of men standing by the bridge ropes. West sent Wise to smash the radio telegraph, knowing the onboard Sparky was probably already warming the apparatus up. West, though, lost his nerve on the way, and instead of doing this, he ran below decks and hid. This was pretty much the end of West's hopes for a profitable end to the venture. He had about 8 crew members lined up in the wheelhouse facing his double-barreled shotgun and revolver, and more crew members were coming up. Then one approached from the other side of the bridge, just as West was kneeling down to reload his shotgun. Here's a quote. "Seeing that our chance for escape was ripe, I yelled to the crew to run," Chief Mate Richard Brennan told the San Francisco Examiner afterward. "We all broke in different directions. For my part, I ran and jumped through the galley skylight, landing on the cook's hot stove." Soon West was alone with Kohlmeister, who never left the ship's wheel the whole time. Meanwhile, Brennan was running to the captain's cabin, where he got out the dead skipper's revolver. Back to the bridge he skulked with it, and from the shadows about 10 feet away he opened fire, emptying the 5-shot pistol, probably a cheap .32 or .38 caliber break-frame pocket revolver, at the bandit. "He seemed to bear a charmed life, for not a bullet struck him," Brennan told the newspaper. By this time, the lone man was thoroughly scared. "He ran back to the smokestack, but as he did so, he let go another shot at me. That's the last I saw of him." Brennan, now the acting cabin, ordered the engine shut off and the lights doused, basically putting the whole show on pause until morning. When the sun came up, Wise was found, huddled in his bunk in steerage, whimpering to himself. He went insane before he could be tried and was committed to an asylum. Nobody ever found a trace of West. Most accounts say he jumped overboard, but nobody actually saw him do it. So maybe he's still around. Or maybe somebody threw him overboard. Hard telling. But that's it for today. You just heard Amateur Pirate's Bumbling Scheme Didn't Work Out As They'd Planned. It was first published on April 17th, 2011. It's by Finn J.D. John. That would be me. If you'd like to see the art for this story or print out a hard copy for any reason, you can look it up on the website at offbeatoregon.com. There are a bunch of pictures of the passenger liner on the website in various places, one in dry dock, you know, one on the inside passage. That covers us until tomorrow, when we'll upload another one, so look for that after about 6 a.m. And until then, thanks a lot for listening. See you next time.